Thanks very much, and welcome everybody to another one of our great Geek Speak webcast episodes. My name is Glenn Gordon, as mentioned, and my co-host on the Geek Speak series is Lynn Langett. Lynn's joining us again from sunny California. How's it going, Lynn?
Hi, it's wonderful. How's things in your world, which is Atlanta, for those of you who might not be familiar?
Not bad. Fall's setting in a little bit, but I am looking forward to getting out to L.A., oh, gosh, in just a couple of weeks for PDC.
PDC, baby. It's
amazing.
All happening here. We're going to market with Azure. We're really, really excited. And lots of great content around Windows 7. And just going to be a fantastic time. We also have a bar camp coming up before that and a code camp after and some other community activities. So just lots and lots of stuff going on in L.A.
That's great. And I think they have extended the discount for PDC through October 30th.
Yep, on the PDC website. So get on out if you can make it, because it's going to be a great conference.
Pretty cool. So Lynn and I are developer evangelists, and we spend a lot of time working with the developer community. Sometimes we're presenting user groups. Sometimes we're speaking at events like a PDC. And we run into a lot of folks that are experts in specific areas of technology. And what we try to do with the Geek Speak series is give those guests an opportunity to get in front of a live audience. Here it's virtually through GeekSpeak, or if you're tuning in to a recorded GeekSpeak, you can hear the information as well. But it sort of takes us out of the spotlight and lets us bring forward these great gurus that we find out in the community. So who's our guest today? It's Llewellyn Falca, right?
Yep. I met Llewellyn at a community event where he was presenting and got to talking with him and found out a little bit about the work that he does and thought he'd have some great information for our guests. So with that, I'm going to ask Llewellyn to say hello, introduce himself, and kind of talk a little bit about his background. Go ahead.
Hey, everyone. My name is Llewellyn Falca. And, specifically as my background relates to what we're going to be talking about today, I've spent a lot of time in code. I coach teams on how to be more agile, and a lot of times that desire comes from not necessarily wanting just to improve, but kind of gotten yourself into a mess. And so we spend a lot of time getting people out of messes, and that's really what refactoring, I think, is all about, is getting yourself to a better place.
Right, and you're not just getting them out of the mess with their specific code, but you're giving them skills so that they don't get in those messes again, right?
Well, we like to think of it as you can always get out of what you get yourself into.
Okay.
So a lot of times, the first time you do something, you don't do it as well. I mean, if you think about just writing an email, at times you do a scan and you realize, oh, I didn't really say that clearly, or same thing is true with code.
Okay.
You know, we like to think that every time you get into it, it's a chance to do something better.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, when we were trying to pick a topic for today's show, why did you select refactoring tips and tricks as a topic coming out of your work as an Agile coach? Why do you think this has the most relevance for the people listening?
Before I was even a coach, I was a programmer. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I found is that when I was on projects that I was really proud of, I was happier. And happiness, that's like a big part of my life. I want to be happy. And my job is also a big part of my life. And so when my job was at odds with my happiness, my life, like my quality of life, was just suffering. And, you know, one of the things that you can do is all, you know, it's not one thing. It's a whole bunch of little micro skills that when you put them together, gets your code into something you're prouder of. And when you're happier and proud of the stuff you're working with, I seem to be happier and prouder in general. And that was something that was just really good for me.
Well, that's great. Well, hopefully you can share the wealth here. So what we like to do at GeekSpeak is kind of kick it off with some demos, but this is a question-driven show for those of you who might not have listened in before. It's not a, you know, we don't, like, present a PowerPoint and that kind of stuff. So if Llewellyn can share out maybe your desktop now and then show us a demo or two just to get the questions going. And really what we're looking to do is leverage his expertise as an Agile coach and an expert in refactoring and to get some good questions going. So type them into the queue, and we'll send them over to Llewellyn.
So before we jump into the code, let's talk a little bit about how somebody goes about considering what parts of their code need to be refactored. I mean, you talk about getting people out of the mess.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you're not talking about introducing new code necessarily or new functionality. It's more sort of organizing what's there, or
A little bit. I mean, one of the things that we see a lot of times that is a mistake is that people sort of, they recognize that things have gotten bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to do something like, basically they want to say, like, well, let's pause our development for a week or two and let's clean up stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that's wrong. It seems like a good idea, but there's a lot of really big problems with it, one of which is whoever gets 2 weeks to stop developing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, just finding that kind of time is really hard, if not impossible, on a team. And the other issue is that refactoring is changing your code, and with it, there's an inherent danger that comes with that.
Mm-hmm.
When you have code that's really, really, really hard to work with, you'll actually find people shy as far away from refactoring as possible. And the reason they do that is because they're just scared, and sometimes deservedly so, that anything they touch is going to break something.
Pretty fragile then.
Yeah. So I like to say, you know, in let's say you wanted to add a new piece of functionality,
mm-hmm.
go to where you're going to add it and refactor there, because you're going to change it anyways when you add that piece of functionality.
Okay.
And so rather than just sort of academically cleaning stuff up, clean stuff up where you're going to reap the rewards within a day. And you're, you know, we're not talking about a day's worth of refactoring for a day's worth of reward. We're talking sort of an hour's worth of refactoring that's going to pay itself back in the next day that you program.
Okay. And the goals of the refactoring are to get code that's easier to maintain, easier to read, easier to what? Debug?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
And also, we found that refactoring can be used as a exploratory device also.
Ah, okay.
Great. Now do you have something to show us so that we can kind of get started thinking about this?
Yeah. So we have just a little class here that we use sometimes when we do demonstrations. And it's not that good. But I think it's maybe realistic. And a lot of times, you know, one of the things that I like about refactoring is that it's always applicable. Like, when you go back after lunch today, you'll have code that you might think could be a little bit better. And right away, like, you can start doing something about that. And so this is just sort of giving us a context to play around. We can sort of see it around here. And this is just a simple little piece of code. I can actually run it. Should be able to see this. Oh. So you can see it's obviously been sterilized. But the idea here is that it's a charting application. And originally, when this application was created, it wanted to be able to show like a bar chart.
Mm-hmm.
And as it grew, all of a sudden they wanted to be able to show bar charts, but they also wanted to be able to show pie charts. And so they made it so it could handle both. And then they needed to be able to show these charts sort of side by side. And when you do things smaller, you can't just shrink them down. You need to, like, show different data because you can no longer have as rich of amount of stuff to display.
Mm-hmm.
By the time it had gotten to this, what had started as sort of simple and easy had become very kludgy and complex. And I think that's how most of the time we end up in our actual code at work, right? It didn't start off bad, but over time, and usually a project's been going on for at least a year or two, you know, that's a lot of time for things to get messy.
Is it basically people are sort of steamrolling ahead and just making sure the functionality is implemented correctly?
Yes, and there's a lot of pressure on us to do that.
Yeah.
And refactoring is actually the purpose of it is to allow us to do that faster and better. But sometimes you have to take a step back before you can speed ahead.
Okay.
What would the
approach be that you took with this code that's here, for example?
Sorry, say again?
I said, what would be the approach you'd take here? I mean, you've got lines and lines of code. You've got some comments in there, and you actually have some unusual color highlighting, which I'm not sure everybody on the webcast is familiar with, so maybe we'll start with that.
So the color highlighting is because of a tool that I use called ReSharper.
Okay.
And basically, there's two tools out there that are extremely useful if you're going to go into refactoring code, one of which is ReSharper, which I like very much. And the other I also like very much. It's called CodeRush.
CodeRush, okay.
Both of them act slightly different. CodeRush has just recently become much more robust in terms of refactoring. It was originally created more for writing brand new code.
Mm. And just to be clear, these are third-party tools that people purchase that are add-ins to Visual Studio.
And you guys should actually know this better than I do. I heard that there's a lot more stuff coming in Visual Studio 2010.
There is indeed, and in fact, the beta just released. So we encourage people to take a look at the beta, which is now publicly available.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
So one of the things that we will do, again, I'll just remind our listeners who maybe aren't familiar with ReSharper and some of these other tools that you mentioned throughout the webcast today, is we do have an MSDN GeekSpeak blog. And it's listed on the slide deck here at the very end, and we'll post links to all these different tools. So you don't have to scramble and search while we're talking here. We'll post links to all the tools so that you can take a look at them. Another tip that I'll give you is if you belong to a local user group, ReSharper and some of these other organizations are very supportive of the user groups, and I often see them being given away or raffled off at user groups or code camps. So, you know, they're great products, and you might want to look at investing in them, but if you want to just look at them or evaluate them, the user groups are you're really pretty familiar with these tools as well.
Yeah. And some of the tools that we'll talk about today are costly, and some of them are free. But in general, I think one of the things that helps me to be a better programmer is using good tools and using them appropriately. I mean, some of the things I'll talk about today are just stuff like source control. And you'd be surprised how misused source control is.
Hmm. So Michael has a quick question in the queue.
Mm-hmm.
Is ReSharper only for C-sharp, or can I use it with Visual Basic?
It does work with Visual Basic, but I don't know how well,
Since
I don't use Visual Basic. Nothing against Visual Basic for everyone out there.
Great. Well, you're going to show us a little bit of refactoring in action here, if I remember correctly. So. Ready to show us some techniques that you would use in this code that would be applicable to other code?
And the first technique that I use, it sounds really simple. And a lot of times when we go into it, I'm surprised at sort of the resistance to something so simple, but I'm also surprised at how often it's ignored. And the first step is the removal of clutter. And clutter is just anything that doesn't add value to my code. So let's do a little bit of that right away. We'll start up here at the top. So first of all, you can see here the gray out stuff. That's ReSharper telling me that this is never used. Right? So you can see here this horizontal label names.
Mm-hmm.
It's never used. And therefore, it can't add any value.
Okay.
I can just go and remove the unused field. And
so that's you refer to that maybe as legacy lines of code.
Yeah.
Or
You can come down here and we can see this comment here. It says it's the vertical label names.
Yep.
For a variable that's called vertical label names. This doesn't help me as a programmer. I'm not now understanding that it's the vertical label names because the name itself was telling me that. So again, it's just not adding any value to me. So I'm just going to get rid of it. But also, you can see that vertical label names itself wasn't doing anything because it was never being used. So we can just get rid of that.
Hmm.
I see this a lot of times. John says this is better than the old way. I'm not sure if programmers don't get to talk to normal people enough.
I'm going, where is the old way?
Yeah, and why? And it just, at some point, someone felt like the need to justify what they were doing and felt that this did it.
Right. Well, would that be a case that if you were putting an explanation for a change, it wouldn't go into the code so much as it would go into, when the code's checked in, comments about that particular check-in.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
This is exactly the thing to do in source control.
Okay. But I didn't steal your thunder there, but...
They're a poor replacement for source control.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So let's just get rid of that. You can see here we got some other, we got this chart title not being used. I got this default units not being used. I got some more comments here. This is a very interesting thing to me. You'll notice here we have this summary of graph layout, and it returns a landscape or portrait for a constructor. Do you know how to return something from a constructor? So, I mean, really what's going on here is that there used to be a method in between here that got deleted.
Ah.
Comments got orphaned. And the phenomenon that I find interesting is that programmers seem to be more reluctant to delete comments than code. It's an odd thing on how we value stuff. But this is dead. There's nothing there. And there's nothing in this summary. But I see this all the time because that's auto-generated a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just cluttering stuff up. We got some more comments here that don't do anything. We have an entire private method here that's no longer being used. And again, this is just easy stuff to see. It's very safe stuff to do, too. This code is actually under test. I can run them. But even without running them, you know, I can be assured that nothing's going to break. In fact, even if I didn't have a sharper here telling me ahead of time that it didn't work, mm-hmm. or that it wasn't being used, the fact that it would continue to compile would tell me that it's not going to break. I'm just going to go through really quickly here, get rid of some more of this unused and orphaned stuff. But
While you're doing that, there's a question in the queue. Maybe it's jumping a little bit ahead, but you can kind of either answer it now or kind of store it for future in our talk here. Can ReSharper help me, meaning the developer, when using patterns like Gang of Four, Gang of Four, Gang of Five, whatever it is, the standard patterns?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
So again, some of our audience aren't going to know what that is. So do you want to talk about that now or a little bit later?
We'll get into that a little bit later.
Okay, so the short answer is yes, and we'll get in more detail later on.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I want to point out this comment here. It says shows the chart on this method, INIDS.
Mm-hmm.
That might be useful.
Well, you actually had something a minute ago I was about to ask you about, and then it deleted. You deleted
it. Oh, I'll put it back.
But I noticed that it looks like ReSharper is catching the fact that there's a parameter name in the comments.
Yeah.
That's not found in the method.
We have two things going on here. We have orphaned comments. These mm-hmm. at one time were there, almost definitely were there, because probably those were auto-generated comments. ReSharper actually detects that they're no longer relevant, which is quite useful. And then these other ones are still here, but just they don't provide any information. But the thing that I wanted to point out is that I'm leaving the comment that might be useful to me. That this isn't just about blindly going in and deleting stuff. It's just deleting the stuff that I don't think provides any value to the code. I'm going to go through a couple other things here. Change by Sally 214. Again, this is just improperly trying to do source control. Some more blank summary stuff.
This is pretty real world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not that exciting. This is more unused stuff. Here I have an entire class that is now unused. This is the unit class. In the very beginning, I actually had an unused variable called unit. And that's something else that we see a lot. When you delete dead code, a lot of times it makes even more code become dead.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be surprised how much of real-world applications is not being used at all. You know, and if you have a 50,000 line application out there, and you know a good 15,000 lines of it are not being used, you're paying a substantial tax on maintaining those codes.
And what about some of the tools that promise to show you how much code coverage there is in the tests? Is that another way to help with this determination?
It is, but it's slightly misleading.
Okay.
A lot of times, the place that I find code coverage to be the most valuable is in legacy code, where it can tell you that it's safe to go into something that is actually being covered. But there's a couple things to keep in mind. The first is that coverage doesn't mean that the code works, or even that the test is in any way asserting that the code works. It just means it's being executed. You could write a test that just runs a program and doesn't do anything at all, catches the exceptions if they're thrown, and that will give you code coverage, and yet doesn't actually tell you that the code is safe. I think a lot of times people mistake coverage as safety, and it's not. This is one other thing here. This is really important, I think, and again, not really talked about. Notice the formatting here is just wrong. If I'm going to fix that, here I'm using ReSharper's code cleanup. I'll run that, and now my code is formatted correctly. That right there is about as much effort as you should ever put into formatting your code. And yet, I've seen hours and hours of people fighting each other over the format. You know, one person takes it and they put the curly braces one way, and the other person gets it out and they reformat it their way. And it's not that important in reality what your standard is, but it's very, very important that you've taken that standard, put it down into your editor so that you can just format on KeyClick, and that it's consistent across your company, or at the very least across your team.
Right.
This again, we have this comment, rendered chart background might be useful. We got this comment about the bug. Again, this isn't really, well, it's a little bit of source control, but it's also your bug tracking system, where it should be. It shouldn't be in your comment.
Here's a good question. I think it leads to probably where you're going next, although I'm not sure, but we'll find out. It says, can you comment on revising naming conventions to be more compliant with the guidance in ReSharper and in Visual Studio Code Analysis, especially in older code that uses prefixes for data types, so on and so forth?
Yes. Oh, yeah, I'll just go with that one right now.
I was figuring that was going to be a good spot to go next.
That's the next thing you should do after removing the clutter. Names are really important, and one of the first things that creates this sort of cognitive dissonance when you're reading, it just makes it harder to understand what the code is doing. And sometimes, I've seen a couple things with names. I've seen just really hard and confusing names, or it's just, you know, like ADM. And you're like, what is that? I've seen names that with like the prefixes and stuff where you have to sort of do some kind of mental parsing to see what you actually want to see in the name. And then I've seen names that lie. And in one particular case, I spent a very long time on a piece of code that was doing some rotation where one of the variables was called counterclockwise, but it actually rotated it clockwise.
That's just mean.
It really is. And I'm sure it was not malicious on the other programmer's part. But when I realized that, there's two things I can do. One I can say is, oh, counterclockwise is really clockwise, and fix the code. And the other I can rename it so the next person doesn't have to suffer.
Right. Well, maybe they wrote it as if they were looking out from inside the
computer. The other thing is, a lot of times the next person is still me. And so, you know, like, I can't remember what I did last month, and when I get back into that, I have to refight that battle again. So sometimes I'm being nice to other people, but a lot of times I'm just being nice to myself by cleaning up the code. A couple other really quick things just to continue here so we can get to that naming. We got some, this is source control in your comments, right? This is a piece of code that apparently was taken out before the conference. It's just a bad place for source control. And the other thing is people, again, they're afraid to delete this, but chances are if you uncomment this, it won't even compile. Because you never, you know, as your code changes, you don't update the commented out code to make sure it still works.
Right.
Again, we're just going to get this stuff out. This comment, which I also tend to love, we shouldn't get this. I've seen exception comments all the time that look like this. But, of course, the reason we write those catch blocks is because we got them. And then a little bit more dead code here. And so that's the first step. Right now I've taken away almost a third of this file just by deleting stuff that was not providing me any value in the first place. And it's very, very safe. There's almost no chance here that I've done anything wrong because by definition I've done things that weren't being executed. And a lot of times, you know, when people sort of say, oh, my code's a mess, where do I start? The first place to start is just get it as clean as possible in terms of the clutter. But the next place to start, after you've done that, is names. And so let's start right here with this INIDS. That's a hard thing to understand. But shows the chart is not. So I'm just going to do a renaming here. I'm going to use the refactor one, but Microsoft has a really nice one too. Let's just call that show chart. And as long as you use the tool to do the renaming, everything else that links to it will work. And now this comment has become clutter again. So we're going to remove it. And we just have an easier-to-read thing that's a little more straightforward. And that's something else I think is really important. A lot of times, you know, I mentioned before that when people get themselves stuck, they have that, like, let's take a couple weeks off to clean up the code. We argue against that, and we argue strongly against it. The metric we like to use is when you're refactoring, you should never take a step that takes more than 2 minutes to do. Right. So and you know, so TEP being a very useful metric of does this still work? That one might not because the first time I run I sometimes get issues.
So while it's running I was bouncing an idea off of Lynn and we'd like to see if any of the live attendees have horror stories of code they've run into either in their own projects, legacy projects. If you want to type those in the question queue, if we have time at the end, we'll amuse ourselves with those on the webcast.
I've actually broken something. And I think this is a good place to talk about the importance of code or of tests when you do refactoring. A lot of times, you know, the way code interacts with each other is very complicated. And tests are there to sort of, they protect you. They don't stop you from doing anything stupid. You know, programmers are really smart and creative people. And they find a lot of ways to do things wrong. But the test will let you know that something went wrong and let you undo what you did so that it works again. And that's a very important thing to have, that kind of protection.
And to follow on with that, one of our regular listeners is making a comment. He says, and I think it's very true, he says, I think the most important thing in refactoring, like you said, is not to be afraid to do it, is that you have to do it, that people see code is of fragile and brittle. And, well, it works, so I'm not going to change it. And that's just not a really productive way to look at code.
I agree. Courage is the principle there.
You know, I have a real-world example of that. A lot of regular listeners know that I work on this application that's being used for the electronic medical records in Zambia and Africa. And I'm working with some other developers, and we're constantly refactoring it. And it's nerve-wracking when you check it in, because this is being used to monitor the medical records for a country, so it's not like it can break. But it needs refactoring. So I know of which we're speaking here. I know about the courage needed, but also the reward that you get is massive, because when you make code easier to maintain and work with, when you bring new people onto the team, their ability to be productive more quickly is obvious, and the benefits are obvious.
Yeah.
So I see another question here before you get started on the next part.
Mm-hmm.
It says, how do you feel about standard hotkeys such as Control-K, Control-D, so on and so forth, to format code in Visual Studio? Do you even use those? Because it seems like you're really using ReSharper and some of the other tools rather than the stuff built into Visual Studio.
Yes. I like the way you can configure the reformatting in ReSharper better.
Mm-hmm.
And so the reason I use that as my hotkey is because that gets me to a different formatter.
Mm-hmm.
Likewise with the renamer, which one of the things that renaming does in Visual Studio that I actually really like, it also does it in CodeRush, is it allows you to change the name and then afterwards say, oh, I meant to rename everything like that. But the thing that's really nice about that is that you can do it after, you know, sort of as an afterthought. But the thing that's bad is you have to do it where it's declared.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that's nice about ReSharper is you can change the name. And you know, here I'll show you, we have this thing called CT.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That really should be chart type. And I can do that here where I find it. I don't have to go to where it's declared to do it. And I like that freedom of just sort of the moment I realize what this should be called,
mm-hmm.
I can change it. And that's why I use that particular keystroke. Other than that, I have no, you know, there's a lot of different tools out there. There's a lot of different techniques in the factory. And like I said, it's a bunch of micro skills.
Mm-hmm.
Use the one that helps you at the point that you need help. And that's the purpose of these techniques, is to help you. And you know, it's not a, this is better than that. It's just use the one that is going to help you now.
Cool. Well, we've looked at cleaning up clutter. We looked at renaming. What are some of the other common techniques? And maybe we'll, you know, can get into some of the more advanced techniques. I'm not sure exactly what your progression is. But I know you have tons to show, and you typically give much longer presentations, even full-day or multi-day classes on this. So it becomes really tricky to figure out what to show in an hour. But I think some of our listeners might want to see some of the more advanced techniques.
Absolutely. And let's jump up into those. Let me make sure I have passing tests before I continue on so we can see a little bit of safety here. Yay. All right. So the next technique that I think I use the most is that one of the most troublesome things, especially for me, I know programmers that have a really prodigious skill for this, of sort of they can look into these functions that are thousands of lines and they can trace what happens and understand it. But I'm almost like just, you know, challenged in this respect. And when functions get longer than 30 lines, it's very, very hard for me to understand what's going on. And so these long functions are usually the first place where I really get confused with my code.
Mm-hmm.
And so I usually find those to be other good things to start cleaning up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have an example in here. Here we have this function, draw chart function. It starts on line 51, and it goes down here to line 174.
Wow.
Yeah. That's 100, 120 lines. Now, this is far from the worst method I've seen. But still, it's big. It's very hard to sort of put that all together. And so let's take a quick look at how we're going to clean that up. And this particular method is using something that I find really, really useful to get into methods, which are these if blocks. And if blocks tend to be just good seams of places you can rip code apart. And so, you know, you can see you have this if block here. That looks pretty good. We'll just take that and pull it out right now. There's a comment above it called render chart. So maybe that's what it does. I'm going to go for now like it does, because I can use any name I want to do this. Sorry, not sure why my keys are not working there, but we'll just go do it this way. So say render chart background. But I could use any name I want because I can always rename it once I understand it. And in fact, once I do that, you can see right now that this brush that's being used here kind of ends right next to it. So that probably should have gone into the method. So I'm just going to undo that, go back, grab the brush as part of that extraction, and then redo it. And I find that this sort of stuff happens a lot. As you're refactoring, you do something, and then all of a sudden it shows you something in your code that you say, oh, well, that's the better way to do it. And then you do another refactoring that gets you to an even better place. And, you know, again, we talk about that never be more than 2 minutes before you can check in and go home.
Mm-hmm.
That means you're not doing it perfectly. You're going to do it a little bit better and a little bit better, and over time, a little bit better leads you to good. And over time, a little bit worse leads you to bad. And, you know, most people follow the little bit worse path. And that's why they end up with code that is really hard to work with.
Okay. Now, one of the things I noticed about that code that you moved to the render chart background, it seems a lot of it was repetitive. Is that also a good candidate for moving off to a function?
It's a great candidate for moving off to a function. In fact, yeah, let's go into that and take a little bit more of a look. So this thing right here, it's called a magic number.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing that's a great candidate to get out. Here I'm just going to extract it to a constant. Now 150. In fact, you can see it's highlighting down here when I put it over the 5, that it's found this 150 in two different places. But obviously, like, chart type is 150 is different than the position I want to fill the rectangle.
Ah, okay, I see what it's doing, right.
And that's one of the dangers of magic numbers. They become hard. Like, if I want to change 150 to 151, a search and replace throughout my code base could be disastrous. Let's do just a couple little quick things here. Let's first, that was also should be chart type. This is the field of it. So let's just rename that there.
And I noticed you're also getting prompted for versions of that that end in an I.
Yes, which is not actually what we want to do at this moment.
Right, okay.
and then let's just do the one occurrence, and we'll just call it chart type bar chart, because that is, undo that. Went just a little bit farther than I was hoping for right there.
Mm.
Only pull out that version, chart type bar chart. Just makes it a little bit easier to read, and this actually isn't quite what I wanted either. I wanted to.
I thought for that you'd want to do maybe
push it as
an enumeration and store them at the class level.
Ah, yes. Enumerations seem like a really good idea.
I walked into that one, didn't I?
But
no, it's one of the things that we always see. The thing about enumerations is if you were designing this from scratch, that would absolutely be the way you want to do it. And I think that's what you're seeing here. But the problem is, if I'm refactoring this to an enumeration, I need to change every place that's using it to use that enumeration, which I don't want to do.
Okay.
Once I get this all using this constant, then I can switch it to an enumeration. But to do it at once is a really big step. And A, it violates the 2 minutes from going home rule. And B, it just really makes it preventative to do that. What is it complaining about here? Ah, so I messed something up, which again is a very good reason to have something that lets you go back.
Undo is your friend, right?
Yeah. And the quicker you know that you've done something wrong, the easier. And I'll just do it as I actually should have done it. Cancel. Just 150. And extract it as an introduced constant.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah. So, chart type bar chart. All right. So once that's there, you can see this readability becomes a lot easier. You can see, like, if this is a bar chart, we're doing this, and otherwise, which the else of this is a pie chart, we're doing this. And so again, we can pull that out very easily as just render bar chart background, and here,
yes.
As oh, but again, we have this the code exposing itself. All right, so as I do this, I can see that the brush that I'm passing or that's coming out of here, the purpose is so that I can dispose of it down here on line 169. All right, so that's a weird function. Sends you back the brush so you can dispose of it for you. So let's just undo that again, take that brush, dispose of it inside each of these else statements, and construct it inside each of these else statements. And then let's go back and re-pull that method out.
So the point here is that there's still thinking required. No, tools are smart, but you still have to have some common sense when you're doing this.
Yeah.
Right. I noticed when you highlighted, when you do the second one, the proposed method signature in the bottom window says private void at this point. And I think before it was saying brush. So you could think about that at this point and say, well, do you need to return anything? Is it just operating on a member that we're sending down to it? And so that's where you might realize that that's the case.
Yeah. There's something else that's occurring here that I think is really, you know, so we talk about this thinking part of refactoring. The tools are helping you. They're helping you to do the things that you're thinking of. But one of the things that I find really useful also is just, you know, if you pick up some pattern books or do some studying of patterns or just, you know, talk about what you're doing day in and day out, you'll start to discover patterns. People are like pattern recognition machines, and programmers tend to have an even better skill at it. You'll start to notice these things where you're like, well, things work better when I do them like this. And a lot of times when you refactor, you'll start to see that. You'll be like, oh, this would work better if it was done this way. And then you'll start to guide yourself towards that answer. And one of the things that I see here is I have this duplication of name right? Render by, our bar chart background, render pie chart background. A lot of times that works better if I, if I'm not doing it here in this if statement, but if I send it off to objects. So let's take a quick look at doing that.
It also might be a good candidate for a factory pattern.
Exactly. Yes, exactly what I'm trying to say. So let's make it a factory.
Okay.
First thing I'm going to need is a bar chart. So this is a very small step. I'm going to use ReSharper here. And someone asked earlier, does ReSharper help you get to like Gang of Four patterns?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
This right here, you'll see it help us do that. So the first thing it's going to help us do is to create that bar chart class. And control minus, I believe.
Now the classic book on this, for those of you who haven't discovered this yet, is called Refactoring. And it was written by, if I remember correctly, four programmers who basically came up with the most common types of refactoring, such as the factory pattern, and wrote them out as patterns. It's written in Java, so if you have a C-sharp inclination, you'll have an easy time to understand it. If you have VB, it'll be a little bit more challenging. But it's something that all of us that are using refactoring would recommend. I'm sure, Llewellyn, you've read that, as well as many, many others.
Another book that is really, really useful is Working with Legacy Code by Michael Feathers. And it's a nice little book. It's almost like a choose-your-own-adventure book. You know, there's lots of little two- or three-page articles and just tons of little skills. Really valuable. So if we look at what we're doing here, we created that class bar chart. I used a little technique here of just making the function static.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I did that is so I can use my tool again to move it onto bar chart. So now I've sort of just lifted that method onto bar chart. And then I'm going to once again use my tool to make it not static.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I've just moved that function onto this new object called bar chart. And I'm going to do a very simple thing over here and do the exact same thing for pie chart. And when I do that, I need to create that thing. I'll let my tool do that for me. And I'm just going to make that public. And where were we? There, pie chart. And then I'm going to take this function again, refactor and make it static. And the reason I do that is so I can now move it on the pie chart. And my tool is actually telling me that that won't work because I didn't allow it to move to become public. And now that it's there, I'm going to use my tool one more time. And this is one of the things we find a lot, is that the tools, you can sort of combine what they do to make a bigger movement. So now I've moved that onto chart. There's one more thing that I kind of need to do here. I need to make these identical functions.
Mm-hmm.
And while they look very similar, you can see they're not named the same thing. So again, I'm going to now use my renaming. And I think it's fine now just to say render background.
Okay.
So change that on one. Change that on the other. Now they're sort of identical. Now I can go to bar chart and say extract an interface.
Wow, this is a great step-by-step guidance it gives you. That's pretty nice.
Now we have an eye chart out here. And that means I should be able to... Let me check really quickly and make sure I... Yep, so it does that. Let me turn both of these public also.
So now we got this chart here. It'd be nice if pie chart was also an eye chart. So again, I'm going to use my tool to make it implement eye chart. And now you can see, something went wrong here. Public void render background. Looks good to me. Let's see what it's complaining about. Let's undo again. The beauty of small steps. And this is something else I find happens a lot. I'm about to redo this exact same thing again, and I'll be surprised if it doesn't work. But I won't be able to tell you what I did wrong the first time. I'm going to go to here. I'm going to make this identical again. Render background. Render background. Ah, actually, I can tell you what I did wrong. I don't know how to spell. Background should have
there you go.
Spaces. And now, let's go and just do that.
Oops, don't drag it around.
Do that little technique again. Pull out this interface of iChart. Make sure those are both public. Go to pie chart. Make it an eye chart. And now I have that working nicely. And now you can see this chart itself is duplication.
Mm-hmm.
We could really here say eye chart chart.
Right. Oh, there we go. Yeah.
Aside. And now, even this, we can do a nice little quick fix to make it just a conditional. And join it. Now we have sort of just a two-line function, which in and of itself isn't providing us much value. So let's just go and inline that.
Reverse extract the method, right?
First extracted it, now inline it.
Now you're getting fancy.
Yeah.
And we like that. We like fancy.
This is where when I'm working out and my coach is doing lots of workouts, and I'm like, no, coach, you do that.
But this is something that we see all the time.
Yeah.
You take these small steps, and each of them seems simple, and each of them seem trivial, and then all of a sudden you look back, and you're like, wow, I really have something much, much better now.
Elegant, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And a lot of times you don't know where you're going, and you still end up somewhere elegant. And I think that's, from a personal happiness point of view, when my code works in a way that I didn't expect it to, I feel really proud. You know, when something just sort of occurs there and something comes out of left field and it just fits into your code, like that's a good feeling. You know, and when your code just sort of emerges and it looks all nice and clean, like it just feels good. It's hard to express how much enjoyment I take out of that experience.
Well, sort of you're sculpting it in a certain direction and it takes on a nice elegance. It's really cool.
Yeah.
So, I have a question before we wrap up that sort of sets the stage maybe for the future. And that is that a lot of the refactoring approaches that we took here were for this particular version of the .NET framework and Visual Studio. And then as the languages introduce new capabilities, you've got to keep your refactoring skills up to date with those things. And the one thing that jumps to mind, for example, is anonymous methods.
Lambdas, yeah.
And lambdas and stuff like that. So lambdas, how does one approach that idea of, as these new language features come into existence, that I can now learn the skills to recognize, oh, this needs a lambda or this doesn't, you know?
And I would say Lambdas are the most powerful thing I've seen in years.
Mm.
I use them all the time, and they remove duplication in a way that you can't even begin to fathom.
Right.
One of the examples I'll use that I think is really powerful is, let's say that you had an HTML page that you wanted to sort of read in and get all the hyperlinks out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Where's the duplication in that and string.replace?
Yeah.
It turns out it's all over there. You can take the string.replace, and instead of passing in a string to replace it to, you pass in the regex expression and a string usually. But instead, you can put in the regex expression in a small little lambda that just says, hey, whenever you match, pop that into a list. And boom, you end up with a list of all your links.
Yeah.
The amount of duplication you can pull out with lambdas is just unprecedented. And I could gush about lambdas, for a whole hour.
Well, that's just perfect, because maybe we'll have to have you back. These hours go by so quickly, and we are really at the top of the hour, so
right.
I see that we've set the slide deck back to the resources. And
right. One thing I wanted to point out real quick on this previous slide is that we do have our Twitter names below here.
Actually, that one is not right for me. It's L. Langit.
Oh, L. Langit. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're both on the
Sorry.
So on the... on the link slide here, we do have our link to our GeekSpeak blog, where we'll be posting summary information, as well as you can catch announcements of upcoming GeekSpeaks that we have. We also tend to put our recorded shows on Channel 9, so you can download them, and we try to break out the audio part as well, so you can listen to them on your Zune or other audio device while you're commuting. And then we've got our blogs listed here, me and Lynn. So, Lynn, that's why I got confused, because your blog is SoCal DevCal.
Yeah.
And then we got Lou Allen's blog here as well. So definitely, it was a great hour, lots of rich information. Thanks very much, Luan, for coming on.
For having me on.
Great, and thanks, Lynn, for co-hosting.
Sure, you bet. And, we've got some great shows coming up. Starting in November, we're going to be running a series of shows around Windows Azure, because, as we said, we're going with commercial availability for Azure at the PDC, which is November 17th. So we know you'll have a lot of questions around Azure.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be building on that through November, probably, and December. Also, we're looking for new topics, so if you have specific topics, send us a mail via the MSDN GeekSpeak blog. We're thinking Visual Studio 2010 would be a good topic, but, as the new year rolls around, we want to deliver shows that you're interested in. So thanks for listening in, and hopefully you'll listen in to a future show.